Hi, I'm Matt McFarland, and we're putting the humor in horticulture on the growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. Shovel along with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we're typing. This is the growing season. I'm Matt McFarland, as I am every single week, sitting behind the AutoCAD. Speaking of the AutoCAD, I am pleased to be joined around the table by Jack McFarland and his wife, Lynn, surrounded by a 55-inch TV with a landscape design on it. But to my left, Mom, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Father.
Matty, I'm great, but my brain has become mushy.
Yes, yes. That blender sound that you hear in the background is our brains being put into it. It is design season. Landscape design season. In fact, we'll bring you up to speed a little bit on why this early onset of spring is a wonderful thing for us in the way that we sort of conduct our business. But we are continuing to celebrate spring. This is what, part 79 of the Celebrating Spring series. All right. So anyway, we're going to be celebrating the time of the year where things begin to grow. And what we are doing here at the Growing Season, growingseasoncanada.com is the website, is we are doing a ton of landscape design. In fact, I think one of the busiest seasons I've seen so far when it comes to landscape design. And that's for a myriad of reasons. But we are in the middle of currently tackling a big one. And you've heard me make mention of that on previous shows. And we'll be able to sort of update you on where that stands right now. But this week, celebrating our landscape design season being out and in full force. And we'll sort of give you some industry tips, inside information, not too much. I'm not willing to pull back the curtains all the way. In fact, I have some secret sauce that I never want to reveal. I'm going to keep do never.
I love it.
That I do not want to reveal. Okay, celebrating spring. This is our design show for the spring season. I'm sure there'll be one for the summer season. But this is the growing season, brought to you by growingseasoncanada.com. AutoCAD with us. The show continues. This is the growing season, brought to you by growingseasoncanada.com, as we do every single week. Emily McFarland, she of the most wonderful, wonderful little smile and hair and
she's so cute,
little petiteness. Emily, bring us in.
Ladies and gentlemen, start your engine.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, daughter of mine.
Love her much.
The only granddaughter in a stable of grandchildren. Right, Mom? She's the...
a stable?
Well, yeah. You have three of them.
We have three, yeah.
Yes. But the point is that she is, yes, so absolutely, there is a spark pluggedness to her. She's absolutely wonderful. But you heard me make mention on the tee-up of this whole thing is we're going to be chatting about landscape design here. And the first thing that I'd like to say is I'm not going to be giving away... There's some... Yeah. Secret sauce. It's the Colonel's 11 herbs and spices. I'm not going to be going too deep into this, only because there are certain things that myself and my father do as landscape designers that are sort of unique to us. So I'm not going to be going down that road. The one thing that I would like to make sure that you as the homeowner hear from me as the installer / consultant is this. I divide my business up into three distinct parts. Those parts have got nothing to do with each other. Here's how this functions. And it's funny how many times clients say to me, this is sort of unique. I offer three different services. Landscape consultation, which does not automatically preclude you to getting...
And ballet.
And ballet. Which does not automatically preclude a landscape design. Okay, you can actually have me on your site and we wander the property and we talk about the property's pros, the property's cons, the areas of concern, blah, 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 blah. We can shake hands. I hand you my business card, hop in my truck, and I go home.
Okay, wait a minute. That's great. Okay, I know you're going to go on to number three or whatever.
Number two.
Yeah, 500 or whatever.
Yep.
But in your opinion, what is the number one problem area on a property? Number one.
Well, it's probably drainage would have to be up there. That's a big one. But how about the side yard? The yard where everything's sort of dropped.
The garbage.
Like the junk drawer, yeah. But just of your property.
Very yes. good. Mom?
I would think shade light.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, so areas up against fences, new additions and so forth, houses. That's a big one, right?
Yeah.
No, it's great, Mom.
Okay, so I get onto your site, and it's a consult. You're not pressured in any way to sign up for a landscape design. Now, here's what happens. 90% of the time, I get onto your site, and you're saying, oh, I'd like to look at this and this and this and this, and Mom and Dad used to plant this and that. Okay, so now, in order for me to make a cohesive assessment of all of this, we're getting into a landscape design. Completely separate service. What I should do is pull off my consult hat and put my designer hat on, and it's like, hi, I'm Matt, and to sort of reintroduce myself.
So besides aesthetics, what is that drawing or that design you're doing? What's its main function?
Okay, great question, Dad. And Dad knows the answer to this, but he's simply playing as the homeowner right now. Here's what the landscape design allows me to do. I can price this down to you, for you, to the penny. I'm talking right down to the last cent. I can say this is what this job is going to cost. So here's sometimes what I have had with clients. Clients say to me, so if we go and we get the landscape design done, then we get involved in part three, which is an install. Do you wrap the cost of the landscape design? Does that just get dropped into the install? No. And here's why. My time is expensive. And in order for me to sit with your property and play with this and make it feel cohesive and absorb all the information that you've given me and then take that information and filter it into a landscape design, I deserve to be paid for that. Regardless of if you're actually going to build the thing or not. Here is, I will correlate this to another situation. In a former life, I taught drums. I was up to about 65 to 70 students a week. I left landscaping in the early millennium and went and got involved in music. That was another passion of mine. And let's say I had a student that was supposed to show up at 4 o'clock, but they decided that they're either not going to show or they cancel last minute. The studio's policy was to have me paid regardless if the student is there or not. And you had a certain amount of parents that were like, wait a second, but we didn't get the lesson, so we shouldn't have to pay for it. To which I would very, very respectfully respond when I saw them next, if they actually asked about it, I would say, hold on a second. This is like you're at the office and your boss tells you, listen, you're going to work for the next 30 minutes. You're going to be here in office for the next 30 minutes, but not be paid for it. Would you accept that? And the boss is like, and they were like, no, it's ridiculous. I'm like, well, that's what's happening here. So here is my point. For me to sit down and design your property, and if you've had a growing season design, nothing is cookie cutter. I literally measure up your property and we start from scratch. For me to do a bespoke custom design for your property, even if it's a little area, that takes time.
And we are very aware of recycling.
What does that have to do with
your design and everything, Matt? You want to make sure that everything that is on your site, if it's got any value.
So, part two is a landscape design. And as a homeowner, you should expect to pay a service fee for this. And then clients ask, you know, what's a landscape design cost? Well, you know, you can have a small area that's $500 and then you can get into the big monster ones that are $4,000, right? And then part three, inevitably,
have you ever done a $4,000?
I've never done a $4,000, but a $2,500 one I've done.
Sure.
Big, right? It all depends on the size of it. Generally, when you start getting into a $4,000 design, it's usually either a large estate or you're getting into something commercial, right? Big, 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 big stuff. It depends on the size. And again, we don't cookie cutter anything. Everything is done.
No.
I literally look at your property from a completely clean slate and then we build it. And then finally, speaking of build, as we get into the install, and this is where you start to get into more money. And you'll see if you've ever had us on site when it comes to dealing with the money end of things, which usually takes about 5 minutes at the very end of the presentation, is I always give you options, right? You can do, so let's say there's three different areas. I divide those areas into three different areas, and then there's options within that. I expect my clients, potential clients, to do none of the work. I always go in thinking, okay, none of this is being done. So how does all of this information break down for you as the homeowner? Okay. If you have a landscape contractor that comes onto your site that is not, that is going to quote for you the job without some manner of landscape design, do not go with that person. Even if it's a little retaining wall that you're putting in, there should be some manner of this person going home and sitting down and working this out. If that landscape contractor is not taking notes, is not visibly making references and notes to what it is that you're saying, do not go with that contractor.
Great practice, Matt. I see you.
If that contractor does not have some manner of website, and I don't count Instagram or Facebook as websites, there's got to be a website here, a professionally created website. And the
reason, YouTube. How do you feel about that?
But YouTube is not a website. The website, think of it like this. It's your digital HQ. Okay? So you go to growingseasoncanada.com, and I'm not only saying this because I have a website. The major landscape companies out there all do this. It's taking your business and your craft seriously. Just posting pictures on Instagram or on Facebook, that doesn't necessarily count. There's a buy-in necessary. That website should have their portfolio. In other words, visual representations of the work that they've done, visual representations of their designs, testimonials, a way of getting in touch with them. There's a significant financial investment involved in any level of construction, and this company should be taking that significant financial investment seriously. Mom?
Also, their Google reviews.
Which can be purchased, by the way. There are services that will let you. Or some companies that say, listen, I'll take $500 off of the cost of the job if you give me a 5-star review. If they need to offer to take $500 off the cost of the job for a positive review, don't go with that contractor. The work should speak for themselves, Dad.
So, Matt, you never really know who's coming on your property.
Completely.
Okay, tell you about your gardens for the future. Okay, or your trees or whatever. But it comes down to this, Matthew. It has never been a governing body that is in charge of what you're getting as far as landscaping. So you aren't sure, okay, Matt does not have giant trucks or anything like that. But when he shows up on the job site, he's aware. And he generally will give good information, even if sometimes I don't agree. But
well, you're wrong.
No, I'm wrong, maybe. Yeah. But you've got to understand, listeners, this is your property. It's a private space, and you want it done in a certain way. You might have a certain style and whatever. But it all comes down to, in the end, we are there to advise. Whether you take it or not, take the advice or not, we don't know. But, Mom, if you were going to be starting doing a landscape plan, let's say you're just the average gardener, what is a really easy way to go about, let's say, getting some base knowledge before you even start that plan?
The internet?
Internet's a good one, but what else?
Well, okay, I'm a banker's daughter. My first thing would be, what's my budget? What can I do with it?
Okay. What I'm asking is, what would you look at?
I'd look at my property.
Okay, not just your property. What else? Well, I'm talking about before you get to touch
your
property.
Just answer the question. What is it?
Okay. So when you're going about driving around your subdivision, yes, there are ideas that have been done or things that have been done on various properties. So you see that and you think, I might borrow that, might borrow this. You take a walk in your forest and you have a look at what is going on in the woodland areas so that you can eventually apply it to certain spots on your property. Wait, rivers, everything else. Wetlands. How do you approach a wetland? You've got this beautiful landscaping going in. Matt has one right now, listeners. It's a modern. And there is going to be a culvert system required in order to, before he really gets into the fancy stuff. But he has to be aware of that. So everything comes down to is see what's going on in nature, see if you can apply it. Yes, Matt says go to your various websites and look up the information. But be prepared before you ever touch your own property.
I agree. Absolutely. The other thing that you'll see is, let's say you're a homeowner looking to and interested in getting involved in having a landscape contractor come out. I ask my clients or potential clients a series of questions that help me to refine a design. And this is some of the information that I do feel comfortable giving away. So let's say that we're on the site and we've done the consult version. I said, listen, this is going to need a landscape design. And I give them a price and they say, okay, listen, no problem. That sounds pretty reasonable. And I say, okay, then my phone comes out. I'm not answering texts. I'm not listening to music. I'm not on the internet checking out the Blue Jays score. The phone comes out because I'm beginning to make a note in my notes app on my iPhone of the information that I'm about to glean. Firstly,
strap in, ladies and gentlemen, because it's another segment of Imagine, if you will, on the growing season.
This sounds so stupid, but remember, let's all sort of imagine, if you will, and there's the little theme for that. Remember back in elementary school, top of your assignment, please write your first name and your last name.
Yeah.
I ask this of my client, please, can I have the proper spelling of your last name? And some of them ask why. I'm like, your name is going to go on a landscape plan. I want to make sure if there's silent K's going on here, it's spelt correctly. It's just out of respect.
It is out of respect.
Okay, and then I begin to run down a list of questions. And these questions, audience members, you can have these answers at the ready for your landscape contractor when he or she comes on the site. First one, are you allergic to anything? Now, that doesn't necessarily just mean bees. That could mean, are you allergic to any plant materials? My mom breaks out like crazy when she gets in and amongst junipers.
Yeah.
That might not be a concern to my mom, because, you know what? I don't really get out and amongst the junipers all that much. If you want to use juniper, so be it. I have clients that are allergic to the smell of lavender. So, do you have any allergies? Whether that be insect, whether that be plant material. That's the first question. Second question I ask is, do you have any children? And if so, what are their ages? And that dovetails into, do you have any pets? The reason why I'm asking that question is not because I'm casing your house. It's because I want to know if you've got young children that are predisposed to crawling onto a patio area and potentially putting a berry or something in their mouth. I need to eliminate that grouping of plants.
And you don't want the little ones to perceive your gardens and plant material.
You got it.
As being something that's dangerous.
It's frightening.
Hands off.
Yeah.
You're missing out, Matt.
Even pets. The instant they say, yes, we have two dogs that love to roam in the backyard. Oh, roam in the backyard. Okay, which means automatically it calls up a bunch of different little menus for me. Firstly, these plants should be urine resistant, right? These plants should not be a poisonous or toxic plant to dogs.
Thorns.
These plants should not have thorns. We
thorns
had a client
for sure.
that had one of their dogs got involved in a plant that had thorns, and it lacerated their eye. And there was an expensive eye surgery. Now, granted, I didn't plant this plant, but the point is that was a good learning. It was a good takeaway from me. Okay. So again, any allergies? Okay. I even say any opposition to pollinators, any opposition to birds. Believe it or not, I have a client that has a bird phobia. So you want to eliminate stuff. Everything's going to attract birds. But again, large trees that have a lot of berries, you're getting into more birds. Yes.
And do you want to attract or deter them? We have a lot of customers who... out in the country, Matt, in the past you haven't done it, where they want the deer to come in so they can see them and they want to experience nature close up.
Right? So allergies, phobias, kids, pets. Then I start to ask a series of questions that many customers are not necessarily used to. Firstly, any nostalgics? And that means, what did mom or dad plant that you'd like to see included?
Yeah.
Or the other side of it. Is there anything nostalgic existing on the site that you want to make sure makes its way into the design? Dad, your story, yes?
Grandma Lee's story. I had a customer, we did the backyard around the pool area, so it was heavily hit, Matt, okay? And so anyways, she asked me to look at a plant in the front yard. Came around, it was this Prunus triloba multiplex. There's a Latin letter. So anyways, what happened was this thing had maybe two branches, Matt. It was only the part alive was about 18 inches up. It was pooched, okay? So in most cases, we'd look at this thing and say we'd dig it out, or we'd run the truck over it or something like that.
But that's a mini excavator fodder right there.
But she said it was one of the memories that her father enjoyed gardening. And this was one of the plants that he'd first given her when they moved into the house.
Yep.
So we tried. Okay, so we went around, we dug, we put manure around the outside edges about 12, 18 inches out for the plant, print it back to make sure everything was healthy, and then we fertilized the bit and went away, okay? She called me up about 3 months later, and I thought, oh, what's wrong? And what's wrong with the job? And she said, no, I want you to come down. And so I went down and had a look, and here was this flowering almond looking like an amazing plant, Matt, almost just a baby, right?
Yeah.
And it was blooming and the whole bit.
So that's something that your landscape contractor should be asking. Is there anything existing on site that you want to make sure? Now, my dad talked briefly about recyclers. We are recyclers. If there's something on site that can be moved and or saved and has value, we will use it. Some landscapers come in and it's literally scorched earth. They just trash everything. If you've got perennials that are thriving and loving the area that they're growing in, and there's some aesthetic value and we can utilize this in the design, why not? Okay, as well as, especially as the landscape contractor, walk around the customer site. If they've planted this plant material, it gives you a bit of an indication into what they find appealing, right? Because they wouldn't have put it in the ground if it didn't appeal to them. Yes?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
So all of those questions are asked. And the reason why I'm asking those questions, there's one more, the big one.
Budget?
No.
No? Okay.
Color. I ask clients, are there any no-go colors? You would not believe the level of conversation that this starts. Some clients, no, I like everything. Okay, no problem. Other clients, I do not want white, or I do not want pink, or yellow. Yellow's the big one. I get yellow all the time.
Do you know,
strong opinions on yellow either way, right?
So we're going to be doing a show in the future on yellow.
Yep.
But for the most part, listeners, I don't get it on you not liking yellow. Because for crying out loud, there's this big, huge sun sitting up in the sky that you're seeing on a daily basis. It's kind of yellow. I know what it's not really yellow. It's white. But the fact of the matter is you're seeing this. And there is something called cool and hot yellows. And we're going to get into that deeply, Matt, in an upcoming show.
Cool. Yeah. But so I ask all of that, okay? And then, yes, inevitably what happens is budget comes. But what I tend to do is I tend to tell the clients, listen, let me design it how I'm going to design it. I'm going to close my eyes. And there's always ways of value engineering it. And that's just a way of sort of saying we can shape it to the budget, okay?
Or phase it.
So those questions are key in allowing me to go home and go, okay, this is a landscape design. This is the basis for my landscape design, okay? You'll notice I'll end up taking multiples of pictures of your space, whether that be the front yard, the backyard, or what we call the wraparound, the whole thing. I'll also walk up and take a very detailed photograph of the exterior face of your house, whether that be stone, whether that be brick, whether it be stucco, whether it be siding. And the reason why I'm doing that is I want to tie the color of the plant materials into the color of your home, because that color of your home is the backdrop for everything, because yep, these flower beds are usually up against a house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And always know basically your planting zone. That's very important because you're going to be getting into selection of plant materials. Your soil conditions, are you clay, are you sand, and so forth. It's all about drainage to us, and we don't want to lose these plants. They're expensive. But here's a giant one. Mom mentioned it earlier. Shade light conditions. Knowing your conditions
now,
outside.
Let me, and Mom, you can answer this, but I here's a request, and I get customers that give me Scrabble face, which is just where you reach into the bag.
Oh, yeah, and you get Q's and X's.
Q's and X's. You're like, what word can I make out of this?
And
right?
No use. Sort
of, okay. So I ask the clients to do something for me. Let's say we are going to landscape the front yard. Many times I'll say to the client, okay, so what is it, morning sun? And they're like, I get a little bit of this. Okay, stop. So do something for me. Everybody has a cellular phone now that will allow you to take pictures.
Even me. I
ask the client, do me a favor. Go out into the middle of the space at 8 a.m. or just before work. Snap a picture. Then, if you can do it on the weekend, snap me a picture at noon. Then, if you can do it at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, snap me a picture. That gives me a really good indication of what exactly you've got shade light. Now, the problem is, here we go. Right now, the trees are not in full leaf. Right?
Yeah.
Also, the sun shifts its location throughout the course of the year. So, we are going to get differences. But the point being is, The more I know about your sun shade conditions in this space, the easier it is for me to make accurate decisions when it comes to what plant materials I'm using. Dad?
So let's say that you are not really aware, okay, of various plant materials, where they go and so forth. Should they go in the sun? Should they go in the shade? What is an easy way to identify what that plant is, the area in which that plant is going to be placed?
Well, sunny areas, plants have lots of flowers, and they have usually smaller leaves.
Very good.
Okay, shady areas. The plant's flowers tend to be pastel. Right now in my head, I'm picturing a hosta. And their leaves tend to be thinner but bigger. Think of the leaves as solar panels. They need to attract more sunlight.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. So, Maddie, here you are. You're got your landscaper. You think he's great and so forth. He's going to take on the project.
Or she.
Yeah. Or them. Whatever. So we need to know things like your bylaws, of course. And obviously, we just mentioned all the soil stuff. But also keep your neighbor in part of the mix.
Yeah.
Because if you do not, you can, if you have a friendly neighbor now, you may not have one later because of all the noise and the mess that's going to be created. So make sure that they know that you're going to be doing a lot of construction so that they're going to be part of the experience.
Now, the noise.
This is a service. Even if the client has got wonderful relationships with neighbors on either side and even to the back, I'll make a point of at some point walking over, ringing a doorbell and saying, listen, like, this is going to be really bad. And we make a joke out of it. It's going to be construction and noise and the whole thing. What can I do to make sure that I'm not making life a little bit uncomfortable for you? And 9 times out of 10, the clients or the neighbors like, it's okay. Can you not be running power equipment at 7 a.m.? I said, listen, my guys know that we are not running anything gas powered until 9 o'clock. In the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so what we would also do, Maddie, in the past was if we were going to be there for a long time creating a lot of mess and havoc going on, we would also, the neighbors, whether on either side or whatever, we would give them a plant. We would ask
absolutely
them in advance, what is your favorite?
All right. Plant. Push pause. On the other side, more celebrating spring on the design side of things. This is the Growing Season brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Stay with us.
The show continues. This is Lynn from The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Remember, plan ahead.
Yeah, I love that. Plan ahead.
Yeah.
Jack gave me that idea.
It's the truth. Listen.
Great one, Jack.
Honestly, look. Let's say the design's going to cost you $700. If you're not willing to spend $700 to have a landscape designer spend some time working with your property on paper, are you going to have the $17,000 to put into actually building the thing?
Okay, I got a question for you. So you're spending this $700. So if you went out and you were to buy various plants for your garden and so forth, you're actually up on the cost these days. I'm not, okay, Matt? But let's say a person comes along and they said, okay, I want 5 trees on their property. Is there something that you can see even before you ever get them on that plan? How would you say, okay, I got 5 trees. How much would 5 trees cost installed putting on your property?
$1,000 a tree.
Okay, good one. So you know that before you start, these particular trees.
Now, this is all dependent on size, right? You start getting into caliper trees. What that means is caliper is they measure the thickness of the trunk 1 foot up from the root flare, right? So you start getting into 50, 60 mil caliper trees, good size mature trees going in. It's about $1,000 installed.
Sure. Okay, this is for you. So a person goes out and they buy these trees for their property. Could be in planting beds, could be out in the lawn. Are they the most important plant that you should be putting in first on your garden? Yes or no?
I'm trying to think. I'm thinking the garden beds first, and I don't know why I've thought that. Just thinking,
that's
put that
no.
in first. No?
That's no.
That's no?
You look
okay.
at
some
trees. Are tree
number one. Because the thing is, they take so long to grow.
Yep.
And even if you bring them in, Matt mentioned, 60 mil, 2-inch caliper, that is still a very young tree. So the thing is that you look at this tree, it might live 200 years or whatever. That is an item that should be number one on your property. I don't care, be aware though of structural things that are happening. Are you putting in pools so you know exactly where to place this tree, decks as well?
Well, also eventually that tree will change the shade light conditions on the gardens too.
You got it.
So good.
That's it. So my dad made mention of it too, is, you know, it comes down to order of operations. So many times I get called into a client's site and they're thinking, oh, you know, eventually we'd like to do a pool, we'd like to do this, we'd like to do that. And so there's all these grand ideas. All of this gets discussed in the consult phase. So let's just hypothetically say that the client's talking about doing the majority of their property. Okay, so my first question is, okay, well, realistically, we can do a design for the whole property, incorporating all of the things that we've discussed. But when they begin to ask me, so what should I tackle first? It comes down to, firstly, money, obviously, budget, right? What can you afford to tackle first? Let's say there's no budget, and I've dealt with that before, where it's just like, hey, man, whatever, just do it. My attitude always is, okay, let's say we're going to tackle the backyard because that's where you're spending the majority of your summer months. If there is the potential to get a pool happening here, me as the landscape installer, my attitude is, all right, what I want to do then is put the landscaping against the back fence in first so that I'm not having to work around a pool. Then you would put your pool in, you'd landscape the sides of the fence. You would basically go from the furthest corner and then paint yourself out of that corner. Yes?
Yeah. So, Matt, as designers, we are aware of things like aesthetics. We want to make sure that we choose the right plants and so forth for your home. We're also aware about functional elements, so how things work within the space. So if you have a walkway, okay, you want to access a certain area at the back. We take a walkway from maybe from the front and we bring it to the rear. But everything is about how everything works. And remember, we're not living here. You are.
Yep.
And we want to be as practical and functional as possible. And here's a huge one we keep running in. You know, we have to bang our heads against. Be aware of the outdoor style of your home, your theme. Why, Mom?
Well, for instance, our house, it's country cottage.
Why?
Like, our house looks like a cottage. It's a little late 50s bungalow. Yep. It has a cottage style roof. So much as, hey, I like the serenity of modern, I wouldn't put it with my house.
It just wouldn't
look weird.
No.
So we have a country cottage style garden. Trellises, arbors, lots of plants, lots of color. It suits the house.
Now, the other thing, too, is you also do have the benefit of having two landscape designers, award-winning landscape designers in your family. So not only does the landscape enhance the look of your home, it almost doubles down on it because there's so much of it going on, right?
Yeah.
The problem is that in a lot of cases, what we run into is the client's budget doesn't necessarily fit into
what they
want, right? So that's for us where it's very simple to phase it. I mean, I've even had it where even on a front yard, okay, we can't get to the full front yard this year. Can we pick certain spots that you want to do and do properly? I would rather do less of the work properly than all of it substandard. Mom?
I have two top landscape designers and installers in my family, and our gardens were definitely phased over a period of quite a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the problem,
there's
Matt,
no embarrassment
it's not just
to that.
Budget. It's over a period of time, your tastes change. Okay. So over the period of years, I discovered certain areas of horticulture and I went that way. It's all to do with, Matt, what do you desire? Is it practical for your house? Do you have the money? These are all questions that we need to ask before you really get going big time on your property. We just did one recently, the modern thing, right, Matt?
Yeah.
And so the wife requested to have a little bit of, her input, a fingerprint of sorts that she can put on, we could have on our drawings. We developed a butterfly garden on the one side. This way she gets a lot of her floral color, but we also kept the feeling of modern right across the whole property. But number one thing, if this came down to money, what would the first thing we would tackle? Trees. We would put those in, especially if we know where everything is going.
Yeah.
Okay, big time is after the fact they come in, they put in a tennis court or something. Now we have to adjust for that. May have to move trees. That's an expensive proposition too. So everything has to be thought out. It should be well planned in advance so that you don't need to spend a lot more money on the bottom end of it all. Right, Matt?
So I believe I tackled this last year, but it's popped up again this year, and it does behoove me to repeat this specifically because we are getting into construction season here. So Your driveway, when it comes to construction, is your number one asset to helping to make the job go smooth. And what I mean by that is your driveway becomes the staging area. And you're going to have probably machinery, a disposal bin, dump trucks, skids of whether it be natural stone or landscape pavers. You probably have topsoil, limestone screenings, or HPB. All of this stuff is going to be put either on your driveway or in and around your driveway.
Or you have one that you have to do a design for coming up shortly.
Yeah.
And then you have to create a staging area because the whole area itself, listeners, is on a hill in a forest. So they're going to be putting in walls and so forth.
Yeah.
So all these different things have to be kept in consideration. How are you going to get the materials from point A to point B? And in the most cases, we don't want you personally to get involved in how we do it. Okay, I'm not saying we won't. We will not hide to how we do it.
Sort of stand back.
But we put our we get those containers in for a good reason. We want to make sure all the materials that are going out off the site are removed easily.
Yeah.
And for the most part, Matt, they get put into dumps and our parks and so forth. So it's not like it's just disappearing. But we try to be as up to date as humanly possible. We want to make sure that everything, and we are on the environmental side. Nope. We never touch chemicals. Therefore,
okay. So you're way off track here. Okay, so
no, not.
So the point is that your driveway is your number one asset to making this job go smoothly. So my point here: if you have a landscape contractor come in and they're trying to convince you to interlock or pave your driveway with landscape pavers before you've done anything to your backyard, don't listen. If you are planning on doing anything in your backyard, whether that be putting a hot tub in or a swimming pool or doing a major renovation on your backyard, that should go first. In other words, your driveway should be the last thing that you do, because these construction companies are going to need to use that driveway to stage. And if you've got a brand new, freshly installed interlocked driveway, damage can occur.
Sure, and be aware of, if you're going to be doing your backyard, be aware of your access point in and out of the space, because you don't want to end up having it that you cannot get in that space except doing everything by hand.
I agree. So oftentimes what happens is you have a potential client that looks across the street and they see that their neighbor's got a brand new interlocked driveway. That looks so beautiful. Not knowing that their neighbor probably has their backyard already done the way that they like it, and the whole thing's done, and that person has now done the driveway as a last measure. They would then call a paving company in or a landscaper to come in, and they would interlock the driveway. Then 2 years down the road, the same client is like, oh, you know what? I want to get my backyard done. But now you're going to have to redo portions of your driveway because you've got trucks and machinery and everything. So my point is that a good landscape designer and installer and consultant, anyone worth their salt, is going to come in and say, stop. Driveways last. Even on this one that we're doing up in the Kleinberg area, the modern one, the brand new driveway is all part of the deal. And I'm going to say, this is the last thing that you do.
And we have actually not taken jobs on, simply because they had a complete new driveway and walkway system up to their front door. So we don't want to do any damage. And right away, before we even got started, first thing they mentioned was cracked bricks on their driveway and so forth. So we don't want to end up being part of the overall
destruction team.
Well, the other thing too is, and my dad makes a great point in that I have walked in on jobs on sites that I would have loved, but the access into the backyard where they wanted the landscaping done involved me trying to bring machinery over brand or freshly laid interlock or concrete or whatever. And I've literally said to the client on site, you know what?
Nope.
Because you've effectively boxed yourself in here, you've made the access on both sides of the house so difficult, I don't even want to look at the job. So again, simple. Let's say you have a blank slate, nothing done in the backyard, side yards, front yard. Do your backyard first, or make sure that you've left one side of the house. You're looking for minimum 48 inches to get into your backyard, and that's the absolute minimum.
Prefer 5 feet anyway.
I would love 60 inches. Nothing would make me happier. But I see so many clients where they've gotten excited about doing side yards and driveways and this and that, and then they want to go and landscape their backyard, and the access is either awful or a non-entity who cannot get in the backyard.
And another problem these days, Matt, is because the lot size is getting smaller and smaller. We're down to like 25 feet across for a single family home.
Yeah.
You end up with having very narrow areas in and out of the yard. We have gone down, listeners, in the Cabbage Town area, where we could not get down either side of the house. We literally had to go through this particular home and do the landscaping.
Through the living room?
Unreal. Through the living room. It was the strangest thing going along, and we're pushing wheelbarrows through the living room and into the kitchen.
Kids are watching TV, and there's a wheelbarrow going by.
Yeah. But we're doing this all day or 2 days. I remember doing it, and it was a bit of a laugh. But these were things that we can't do anything about. We're not going to move your home. Okay, but we are aware of even the mature trees that you have existing on your property, because that makes a difference on every plant that we select. Wait, this is a good question for you guys. So I know it's a tough one. So if you had to pick, let's start with Lynn. If you had to pick your favorite plants, I don't care what it is, a tree, shrub, whatever. Give me about five. Let's hit it.
Well, I seem to be very partial to plants of the Asteraceae family. I like daisies. I like Rebuccia. I like the comb flower. I'm trying to think. I love Portulaca.
Tree?
A tree? Okay, I'm a proud Canadian. Anything maple, especially if it goes bright
red.
Solid
choice, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Maddie? That's just me.
What about you?
Five?
Yep.
Okay, I'll take two trees. Japanese maple, specifically the bloodgood, and I'll take a copper beech. Columnar, copper beech. If I get into perennials, I got to say my Heuchera. I'm a Heuchera addict. I love Touch of Class Hosta. So there's two perennials. And then when it comes to an annual...
My Touch of Class are hiding right now.
Yeah. They're afraid of me. I'm looking at them hard. And then when I get down... Oh, you know what? I was going to do an annual, but let me get into an evergreen, a glow blue spruce standard.
Woo!
Yeah. Baby. Love it. I'm a fan of the expensive stuff.
Dad? So, Maddie, when you're out there...
Yours.
Come on. Where's yours?
We gave ours.
Five?
Yeah.
Go.
Five?
Yeah.
Go. Okay, I like Drummondi on the Acer, so I like the variegated Harlequin maple.
Man, I have not planted one of those in ages.
I like a lot of things that are variegated.
Trees for bark?
I like tessellations especially. So you go along... Sorry.
Just give me your five, please.
Okay, I like the Tahitians, cherries, okay, with the strange markings on the...
You mean Tibetans?
Tibetans.
Yeah. Not Tahitians.
No.
That would not be there.
No, Tibetans.
Tibetan
bridal veil.
Again, another one that I haven't planted in, like, a while.
I like a lot of the low-spreading junipers. We don't use them much. I like the Calgary carpets, for instance, Prince of Wales.
Yeah.
Even the blue rug, because I just like the fact that they don't grow very tall and they mound.
Okay, give me a perennial.
Any of the perennials, Echinacea is not my favorite. I'll do with any of the Coreopsis variety.
Okay.
Coreopsis.
I like what goes on in the fall. So you would see all of your asters going.
Yeah.
I know that.
See them.
These days, I want you to put these in, Matt. I want some goldenrod put up the one side of the house because I want to attract, get some food.
It's amazing how it changes year to year, right? Like, for instance, 20 years ago, we were using yucca like crazy, and then we had one winter that just wiped a bunch of yucca out, and then we stopped using yucca. And now on this modern one, because when you're using when you're designing for modern, the plant is, it's designed in more for its architectural purposes than it is for its color. Yucca are very architectural looking, very, very globe, very spiky. It's a very rigid looking plant.
Sure, and I like the gold swords and the bright edges, so the gold swords would have more yellow in it. So everything that you select, and that what is good about yuccas and grasses and so forth, is it gives you a different direction of the foliage. So they go in these strange angles up from the ground, and that's what I like about them. I don't give a care if they flower or anything. I know that the yuccas do. They get that big white flower, but I'm not really... That's not something.
No, that's not really what we're looking for.
And you also have a fingerprint. As designers, we all have fingerprints. We have certain plant selections, groupings, everything else that we work together on your property. But sometimes you request sistering. Do you know what sistering is, Lynn?
Sistering, is that where you put two sort of like plants together or something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Basically that, or on either side of a walkway.
Oh,
okay. Space.
Yeah, okay.
So it's perfect. But you would also see that with your arbors, where you would have certain shapes that repeat themselves within your garden. But Matt, we as designers, we see it and we just do it, okay? And it's not really fair to you. So as you're, do it yourself, you're kind of stuck in the middle. What can I do? What can I achieve? What is my skill set? And Matt would agree with this 100%. Generally speaking, nothing personal here, listeners, is that when you do it on your own off of one of our plans, you never do it justice. And that makes us very sad.
Yeah. So on the do-it-yourselfer end of things, it's very rare that I would go into a client's site and they've DIY'd portions of us and I've said, wow, that looks great. Now, if you're looking to save or areas where you'd like to save on part of the job, there's no reason why your landscape installer can't come in, mark the bed lines out, mark the flower bed lines out, and have the homeowner dig it out. I've had that happen before.
I've had it numerous times. It right? saves you quite a bit of money.
Yeah, and you would go get the bin. You would go, or whatever. You're in charge of getting the fill off the site. The landscape installer would say, I want the beds dug out to 8 inches, and then I want them backfilled with topsoil. I've had that. I've absolutely had that. So that's a way of saving. That's also a way of DIYing it, where you've got your hands in part of the job. But when it comes to the layout of the plant material, that's best left up to the landscape designer if that person is going to be on site. One of the things that you get with the growing season is sometimes what happens is on large landscape companies, you have the landscape designer and then it's up to the installing team to sort of interpret that landscape designer's design. Well, you see it in a number of cases where the installers are making changes to the landscape designer's design or the client's asking for changes on the site, but the designer's not there. When you get the growing season on the site, I'm on site. Like I'm behind a wheelbarrow. And the reason is that I have painstakingly designed your property and I want to have a hand in making sure that it is designed the way that I intended it to be, it's built the way that I intended it to be designed.
Yeah. And be aware that these gardens, for the most part, we get this all the time, right, Matt? Low maintenance, no maintenance. Yeah. No maintenance to us is a green, asphalted driveway. So be aware that this is going to take a lot of work. Mom, explain on our place, for instance.
Well, Okay. First of all, I am semi-retired. But when those gardens go in, there's an hour of watering, especially within the first 2 weeks, every morning. Unless we get rain, and I'm so thankful when we get rain. Weeding every 2 weeks. I do it in zones, but I'm thinking 3 to 4 hours a week. Now, I love being outside. I love the workout that gardening gives me, but you have to be realistic. You know, if you're a young person, say you're a young couple just starting a family and you're both working full-time, don't have gardens installed like ours.
Okay.
Have something that you can manage because it's just going to end up frustrating you if you take on too much.
Mom, would you go to say that if you get involved with the creation of a human life, that the feeding and watering of said human life is not to be considered optional? Yes?
It's not optional, no.
Feeding and watering of your,
well,
of
yeah,
your progeny,
you
right?
have a baby, okay. You have that responsibility.
This is very similar. When clients say low maintenance, the first things that I eliminate is watering. Watering is not part of maintenance. If you've put this flower bed in,
you have to.
There's no option.
No.
You have to, at least for the first 2 weeks to a month, you're on duty.
Here's a big question for us,
right?
Matthew.
Yeah.
Is that we have
your life
plants.
Support.
You are life support.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So many, we have plants sitting in our place sometimes 2 months and more because you're waiting to use them on various job sites.
Yes.
What we do not understand, listeners, and I don't care what you say, is when you call us up and tell us after 3 weeks or a month that a various plant looks sickly or is not, it's starting to look like it's dying, 90% of the time, it's generally because you haven't been watering enough.
Now, that said, yes, you're completely right. But there are a certain amount of plant materials on every install that are going to suffer what we call transplant shock. They're just not happy being
10%.
Taken out of their pot, okay, or whatever.
They don't like change.
And they generally rebound. But my dad is spot on. I've had clients say, listen, these things are not thriving. And I gently say, but they were on my parents' property for weeks before they came to you and they were in perfect shape. How often are you watering? Oh, we're watering a couple times a week. I told you. The first two weeks, it's morning and night. Second 2 weeks, it goes down to just once a day. And then, but again, this all changes if we're into a drought scenario or lack of rain, or it's been super hot, right, Mom?
Now, what I'm going to say, though, is that's not fair to your clients comparing them to me, because I've been married to Jack now 49 years.
100%.
And I was taught how to water.
But, Mom, when you lay out the instructions, when you say this is what to expect,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And they don't listen to those instructions, and then the plants don't necessarily thrive. It's like, well, but wait a second. I told you that this is what to expect. And then we always throw the little thing in. But what if Mother Nature's, it's 40 degrees with the Humidex for 6 weeks, right, Mom?
Well, that's why I said, again, is don't take on more than you can handle.
Right.
It's also not a contest.
Yeah. Also, Matt, when we're doing the landscape plan, I remember somebody asked us once, do you consider zone? Oh, we really consider zone. That's the number one thing on our list. But we also have to be aware that if it's they want a xerophytic area, a dry area, then we would go and we would do everything accordingly. But when it comes to plants, man, it's all about groupings and heights and everything else. Textures, that's a huge one with us. And is it a focal point? Or is it something within your garden that controls the space? Explain, Matty.
Well, again, you start to, I have clients that say, hey, listen, I want this plant included in my design. And sometimes that plant's just not geared for the property or the shade light conditions. So yes, it looks nice, but you don't have the shade light conditions or the space. The number one thing, Colorado blue spruce. I get it all the time. I'd love a Colorado blue spruce. Yeah, but you're on a little tiny subdivision property. How the heck do I get something that's going to grow 25 feet at the base and 50 feet tall? Now, they have dwarf versions of all of these things now, but the point is that sometimes what you've got is not necessarily, or so sometimes what you've got property-wise will not accommodate what you want aesthetically-wise, and that is a great place to press pause. So while we're on the topic of this, I made mention of it just briefly before we jump to the end here, is that they've now hybridized. In other words, these are plant scientists that have taken all of the wonderful things about a Colorado blue spruce, Mom, again, 50 yeah. feet tall, 25 feet at the base, and they've now dwarfed it. So your baby blue eyes and your Yukon blue, 13 feet tall, 7 feet at the base. Therefore, you as the homeowner, as the owner of a property that is, you know, 25 feet wide, you could have one of these things and it doesn't take over your whole backyard. The other thing too, though, is can I get it into your backyard? Sometimes that isn't an option either, right?
Even on your uprights, you got to keep an eye on that. So if you have a limited space, a very small space, something like your dwarf Alberta spruce, for instance, yep. would
or
be a great
Arrow.
Option.
Yeah. Blue Arrow, the skinny
yeah.
ones.
But these are all the things that your landscape designer will say. The instant you say, listen, I like this, or my dad and mom had a wonderful European beach on their property. I'd love one. Wait. No. The idea is that a knowledgeable landscape designer will be able to make those suggestions on the fly so that you can have some of what you want, even though you don't necessarily have the large rural property to accommodate the full-size beastie. Yeah?
Yeah, and always, you know, the landscaper should know mostly what these plants are on your property.
Yes.
So that when you're walking around, you say, nope, that's not right. It's because over a period of time, I think I'm with you over 50 years now,
yeah.
and that's 35, so you learn a lot. Linny, too, here beside me, she's been living up with me, or growing up with me as far as a landscaper, and she yeah. knows.
GrowingSeasonCanada.com is the website. Visit there for all your growing season-related needs. Yeah, guys, we always end the show in a very, very similar fashion. This week would be no exception. I love this one because we have one of these in our backyard for our kitty cat. Guys, I put an electric fence around my garden. Unfortunately, my neighbor was dead against it.
Poor neighbor.
Mom?
Till next time, have a good one, and please be safe.
Jack out.
If you miss any part of our show today or any of our earlier broadcasts, don't panic. Just log on to our website at www.saga960am.ca/podcasts and look for and stream our podcasts of this show and any of our other great programs.